Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and you're listening to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC's proactive, personalized approach to engagement helps you build your major gift pipeline even in a time of social distancing. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights about alumni interest and connections and automatically delivers them to advancement professionals for use in cultivation. QBAC is a force multiplier for development officers, enabling them to focus on what they do best, developing deep relationships with individuals and converting them into active donors. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive Fundraising's training. If you are looking to align your team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about our four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, hire another member of your team, let's ensure everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you'd prefer a virtual seminar, we can do that too. Let's get your team thinking more critically and carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I'll also put some information in the show notes. Hi, Ross. I am delighted to have you on the Fundraising Talent Podcast today. We've spent a few minutes familiarizing ourselves with each other, and I'm looking forward to this conversation. I don't think it's a topic we've talked a lot about, and I always like to bring up subjects that are fresh and new. Before we do that, though, how about we just ask you to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Happy to be talking with you, Jason, and your listeners. I'm Ross Kimborowski. I founded and am CEO of Crowdspring, which is a global marketplace for design and naming services for nonprofits, agencies, and businesses. We can talk about that later. Obviously, I'm based in the suburbs of Chicago and have been doing this, running Crowdspring for the past 12 years.
So when somebody says they're from the suburbs of Chicago, so I was doing a lot of work up there, traveling. I had a lot of speaking engagements, I think, in the sort of the second half of 2019, I guess it was. That's a big space out there. So when you say the suburbs of Chicago, where specifically are you at?
North Shore in Highland Park.
Okay, Highland. Yes. Okay, good. My wife went to elementary school and at Wheaton Elementary School, and Bartlett is, I think, the community that she sort of the first half of her childhood grew up in, and we've got lots of friends up there. So glad to be talking to you. So Ross, we always ask our guest to come with a big idea or a bold opinion. I don't know exactly where you're going to take us with this one, but what's it going to be today?
So ultimately, what we found over the past 12 years working with nonprofits and agencies, businesses, is that it's really important to build a strong brand identity. And for nonprofits, it's critically important to do so to appeal to volunteers and donors. And we'll deconstruct what all of that means. But ultimately, the one defining characteristic between successful and non-successful nonprofits is whether they've created branding and an identity that creates trust, loyalty, and promotes their message.
So what's the, of those three on that list, in the midst of COVID-19, in the midst of the social unrest, and while we're sitting here unable to meet with people in person, what do you think, what's sort of the top on that list?
So let's get into what a brand identity is, because I think one of the chief problems, and this is, by the way, a problem across profit and non-for-profit industries, is what is a brand identity? And so simply put, a brand identity is the visible elements of a brand. It includes the colors, the design, the logo, your website, your business cards, marketing materials, signs at events, anything that you, your donors, your volunteers, and the general public can see. A lot of people mistakenly think their brand identity is their logo. And while a logo is part of a brand identity, it's only a tiny part. And so why is a brand identity important? The mistake that a lot of founders make, whether they're founding a nonprofit or a for-profit business, is they tend to underinvest in design at the time they initially find their organization and pay for that later. And what we have found is that underinvesting in design is far more expensive in the long term. For nonprofits in particular, it's expensive because when you do not gain quick credibility with the public, it's really tough to persuade volunteers. It's really tough to persuade donors. It's really tough to get the general public interested because we make decisions. You know, people make decisions in seconds. So just to give you an example, people make decisions about visual images 60,000 times faster than they do about words. So something like a logo, which is generally visual, is very powerful because it creates an instant reaction, and it's an actual chemical reaction in people's brains concerning that brand. So if your logo is well known, take the Red Cross. They have a very visible, very known logo. And so when we see it, generally most people are going to identify that image, that mark with the Red Cross. On the other hand, if you see something that you don't know or visually not familiar with, then your brain starts to struggle with a few other questions. Is this trustworthy? If the design looks like it was created on Microsoft Paint by a 10-year-old, then you start wondering, can I trust this organization? Is this something that I think I want to invest my time in? This is before people learn about the mission, the values, and everything else. They just connect with the brand initially through visual design. And then when they get to the organization's site, or if they see t-shirts from their organization or signage at events, and that also doesn't look high quality and professional, it creates a lot of friction for everybody to trust the organization, to help the organization, and to distinguish it from the so many other worthy organizations that exist in the marketplace. So investing in design at the very beginning is critically important, and it doesn't have to be outrageously expensive.
Okay. So I've got a couple of students. So I teach a social entrepreneurship course over at the local college. And I've got, and each of these students right now is essentially creating a concept, a business, a social enterprise sort of concept. And a couple of them are essentially talking about creating brands that they're going to sort of license out to, you know, for whatever purposes. I think somebody's talking about t-shirts, somebody's talking about sunglasses, and they want to essentially convert these concepts into some sort of revenue stream to do some sort of social good in their community. If you're talking to them about investing in design, are we talking about investing time? Are we talking about investing money? And how much freedom do they sort of get? Like I think about my own brand with our consulting group. There's sort of been an evolution of that brand. And explicitly, when we talk about very specifically, say, the logo, for example, I've had three or four different logos in the last 5 years.
So ultimately, the answer is both about your budget and about your time. And if you have skills as a designer, most founders who start nonprofits, who start socially conscious businesses, are not designers. And it would be a mistake for them to do the work that they're not really trained to do. This is where a lot of founders make early mistakes, trying to do things that ultimately end up hurting their brand. So in that case, look for either a business, a vendor, or an individual that could help you. It's actually one of the things that drove us to start CrowdSpring, because for nonprofits, for small businesses of 1 to 10 employees, whether they were socially conscious or not, It used to be that you had to pay thousands and sometimes tens of thousands of dollars to brand your new business. You had to hire a small agency or you had to hire a freelancer, and that was far too expensive. People just couldn't afford it. And so just to give you an example, CrowdSpring for logo design starts at $299, including all fees. It's a fraction, you know, 10 times less. And the reason that's important is because when you think about what is a brand, so we talked about what brand identity is, it's your visual design. A brand is the subtotal of all the experiences people have with your organization. So it doesn't refer to your logo. It actually refers to how you talk to donors and volunteers, how you describe your nonprofit, the volunteers that work for you, how they talk to the general public. It's every touch point between your organization and each person that works in or represents your organization and the public. And the most important thing about that is when you think about your brand image, so there's a difference between what you say your organization does and is, and what people perceive. So, and that's called really brand image. How do people perceive you? Here's the thing that a lot of people really don't appreciate. Your brand image is actually how your volunteers, your donors, and the general public perceive your nonprofit. So you may want them to see your brand as one way, and you may be saying things in connection with that. But what's most important in the branding world and to build a strong brand identity isn't what you say or what you want. It's how others actually see your nonprofit brand. And that's where your brand identity, if it's strong, can really help convey a powerful message about your mission and the social good that you're doing.
So we have here in our local community, I've watched a nonprofit organization that has existed for I have to imagine they've probably been around for 5 or 6 decades. And they recently went through a name change. And we did, one of my colleagues did some consulting with them 3 or 4 years ago, subsequent to the name change. And we got the impression that the organization who had perhaps assisted them with the sort of the rebranding is what it was referred to, ultimately it amounted to a name change. Because this organization had been sort of so rooted in the community, which I think is sort of what you're getting at, the organization had been rooted in the community for so long by this particular quote unquote brand. And they continue to do essentially the same thing. The mission had not changed. The way that they served the community had not changed. Communicate, you pick up the telephone and you talk to a prospective or a current donor, the individual, my colleague, had to essentially reference the older brand in order to connect the dots with the new brand. It kept having to come up. It seemed particularly untimely and not particularly wise. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, there are two things. If we unpack what you said, there are really two lessons there. The first lesson is how important it is to start on day one with strong branding and to get that right. And we actually, and you'll have it in the show notes, but we put together a 13,000-word nonprofit branding guide that gets into all of the details for how to properly brand a nonprofit and what goes into all of those elements. It's free on our blog. But ultimately, that's one thing, is how important it is to do it right on day one. And the second lesson is how difficult it is to rebrand if you have to. Now, that second lesson is important because oftentimes, if you're struggling to differentiate from other nonprofits, you may have a great mission, you may have phenomenal volunteers, but it's just really hard to compete for people's attention, people's time, and people's money. Rebranding is critically important. And here's where strategy really helps you do it correctly. So simply changing your name or changing your logo without a clear strategy for how to message that change to everybody in your organization. So your board, people you help, the funders, supporters, volunteers, the media, the general public. It's got to be revealed to them, because if you're finding yourself every time, like this organization, mentioning the new name and then reminding them what you used to be, then your change really hasn't succeeded particularly well.
Yeah. So sticking with that example, can nonprofits nonprofits seem to be the types of, especially when we're talking about fundraising, and this has been sort of my critique on this particular scenario a number of times as people have raised it with me. I'm sort of one of the local, you know, fundraising talkers, if you will. They know I've got opinions about fundraising. If the donor has contributed to the organization as long as they had, I mean, we're talking about donors who perhaps contributed for 2, 3, and 4 decades. It would have seemed that they would have perhaps engaged in that sort of that analysis, that process of sort of deciding what the new brand is, with more input from that donor who had perhaps given to them for 2.5 or 3 decades. But in fact, the rebranding, the new name was much more oriented towards essentially what we perceive to be sort of a vision of what their new customers or their new donors want to look like. So how do you sort of reconcile that? I mean, it's kind of like the difference, like we're talking about here in today's marketplace, between having a longtime baby boomer donor and trying to connect with the millennial donor that perhaps isn't going to necessarily pay for themselves. But you know, at some point they're going to really matter just as much as the boomers do to you today.
Well, there are two ways to reconcile it. First of all, it may be that your organization has outgrown the original mission or has outgrown the original donors and is seeing a bigger opportunity in a different segment of your target audience. And that's perfectly okay. It's, you know, as people grow, you're talking about decades, they have new challenges. They meet new nonprofits. They have different passions. They may have personal reasons to invest in various nonprofits because of, let's say, illnesses that affected members of their family or friends. And so it may be for some nonprofits, you see an opportunity to, for example, target millennials or Gen Z because they are more passionate about your mission and the things that you're interested in. But at the end of the day, there's actually a way to connect those two things and sauce out the difference. So in our nonprofit branding guide, we talk about this process called SWOT, which is used by many for-profit businesses. It's SWOT, and it stands for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And it's a process that you go through to identify the strengths for your organization, the weaknesses, what's holding you back, the opportunities. And one of those opportunities could be that we've historically looked for donations to an older group that is still donating just as they were before, but we're missing out on an opportunity to work with this far bigger, more socially conscious and aware group because our communications, our voice and everything else is really targeting this older group and we can't talk to both in the same way. And then the last one is threats, is, you know, where are these threats coming from? And sometimes it's from other nonprofits that are whose mission is similar to yours. Sometimes it's just other nonprofits in your geographic area, because at the end of the day, people have a limited amount of money they're going to contribute to nonprofit causes. And so you're not just competing against other organizations that seek to have the same mission and try to help the same groups of people, but against organizations that do lots of other socially good things. So SWOT analysis can help nonprofits. And we give you about 30, 40 questions you can ask yourself as you think about it. And part of that is talking to your existing donors, talking to your existing volunteers, talking to potential new donors, and trying to understand how do they view your organization, and you know, what do they view as the weaknesses, as the strength of your organization? Because that helps you hone in on what your new brand identity should be based on how they currently see you.
Let's say we're asking those questions. I tend to see sometimes the tension when branding and identity and even things like simple logos and mission statements and vision, because all these things sort of factor into the brand conversation, I would assume. Who does an organization like yours want to sort of see driving these conversations? Is this a chief development officer? Is this a board member? Is this the executive director? Is this the PR department, the communications director? Somebody reaches out to you from a local nonprofit there in Chicago. Who's that ideal person you want to be hearing from?
So first of all, the person that would do a SWOT analysis is really the person who is most investment in understanding the nature of the organization. So it's not so much a position, but but it's the person empowered in the organization to make changes or to at least facilitate those changes once you understand where your nonprofit stands. Sometimes it's the founder, sometimes it's a board member, sometimes it's somebody in another position. It doesn't have to be a specific title, but it should be somebody that knows the organization, that is comfortable talking to people, that is really good at assessing, candidly assessing the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And then when it comes to the actual branding, we don't do the strategy, we don't help nonprofits do a SWOT assessment, but we provide the branding elements. So logos, websites, marketing materials. And the beauty of our model, unlike the traditional way nonprofits historically have worked with vendors, is historically nonprofits, like most other clients, hire a freelancer or an agency, pay them some money, and then wait to get one or two designs. CrowdSpring works completely differently. There's no bids or proposals. You set your budget, and instead of waiting within days, you see, let's say, 100 logo designs for your specific nonprofit. So you're not picking based on resumes. You're picking the logo that you like. It reverses that process. And so what we tell nonprofits, for-profit businesses is, that process should also be done by somebody within your organization who has an aesthetic understanding of your organization. It should not be a committee decision. It's the worst thing you can do in working with vendors who provide creative services is forming a committee that tries to decide what's the best example. Because a committee is going to deconstruct things to the point where nobody's going to like the end result. And what we do to help you instead is in every design project, we give you an opportunity to launch unlimited focus groups. And the way nonprofits use this really effectively is they'll take their 5 or 10 or 12 favorite designs, and they will share it with their volunteers. They'll share it with their donors. They'll share it on social networks and say, we're thinking about rebranding, and here are the designs that we're considering. Could you give us some feedback? And people can come in and score and provide narrative feedback. And that's a great way to help hone in. And you can actually use separate focus groups for each of those audiences. So if you want to talk just to your volunteers, you have a focus group for them. You could want to talk just to your donors, you have a focus group for them. It does two things. First of all, it gives you that great insight as part of your SWOT analysis. Second of all, it involves them in the rebranding decision and does something that maybe the example you talked about earlier didn't do, which is both get involvement and buy-in from the people that know your organization. Because if they're part of this rebranding process or even part of the branding process up front, you don't need to keep reminding them you were known as somebody else. They would have been part of the movement to get you to update and modernize and create a new fresh brand.
So if I understand what you guys do, because I want to make sure I connect the dots because if I'm connecting the dots about what CrowdSpring does, you could have essentially solved some of the problem that I think sort of played out for this organization. I don't mean to be zeroing in on them, but it seems like a pretty fascinating case study in light of what you folks do, because this is a large organization that, especially during the holidays, for example, is mailing to probably 30 to 40,000 individuals. You know, they have a database that large. I guess we'll say that. I don't know that they're mailing to that many people, but they really were the design and they sort of played by the same rules that you just described. They went to a particular firm, gave them some designs that probably made the designer feel like he or she knew what they were doing. I'm sure it was terribly creative and beautiful and all that sort of stuff, but it was not informed by the community. And so I kind of wonder if, I mean, does an organization like yours sort of have that scale so that we could, you know, if we wanted to get the opinions of couple hundred donors on a question like a branding, can we do that?
Oh, absolutely. So our focus groups, first of all, our focus groups gives you the tools to quickly build them, and then you share them privately or publicly however you want. So we've had both nonprofits and for-profit companies create focus groups for thousands of people who will come in and vote and provide feedback. And some have created 10, 15, 20 different focus groups target different audiences. So that part scales very nicely. And because you could segment your audience And because you control whether it's private or public, you can survey some of your donors by email in one focus group, and then you could survey your social followers on Twitter or Facebook using another one or two focus groups, and you could survey your volunteers and staff using a different focus group, and then look at the differences in their feedback. So it scales very nicely, gives you a lot of insight, and importantly, and this is the part that I think gives you that added benefit, it gets them involved in the process, because doing a SWOT analysis, assessing what you do, whether you're starting at the beginning or you're trying to rebrand, really helps if you can get your staff, your volunteers, your donors involved with that process to help you, because you'll get their insights. You'll know a lot about the organization, which is great. But again, remember, back to where we started, your brand image isn't what you say it is. It's what people think it is. So as you involve people who have a way to reflect on what your image is, you have an opportunity to pull that insight into your rebranding process or into your branding process.
So why you guys had to be sort of picking up on sort of the way this, the sort when you guys sort of came up with this concept, you had to be sort of picking up on the idea that the current sort of way of doing things is sort of flawed. What sort of signals could, if I'm at that organization downtown and we're sort of perhaps going down this path, what sort of signals could I have picked up on if I was, say, on the payroll to know that we're probably going down the wrong path?
Well, I was, before I started CrowdSpring, we started working in 2006 and launched publicly in 2008. I was a trial attorney. So I worked as an attorney for 13 years. And at one point in early 2006, we wanted to redesign the firm's website. And so I also had friends at the time who were running nonprofits, working for nonprofits. So I ran into the same problem they ran into. We hired a vendor. We waited a month or so for them to give us website designs, and I hated all of them. And I hated the fact that we had to spend a lot of money trying to articulate how we were different. But at the end, what I saw from them was cookie cutter and made us look like every other law firm. And so I went home and I said, there's got to be a better way for small businesses, for nonprofits, for small agencies to buy creative services, because big businesses who have huge budgets can pay lots of money and hire lots of designers, can hire lots of strategies. But nonprofits, small businesses, they just don't have those budgets. And so that research and conversations with nonprofits and for-profit businesses led to this idea that we can turn around the way people hire freelancers. Instead of bids and proposals, as we've done for hundreds or thousands of years, CrowdSpring lets you post your requirements, set your own price, and then look at actual designs for your brand. And so you pick your favorite actual design, not your bid or proposal.
So Ross, what if the organization, this, again, if this organization is sitting there and they're saying, we just don't have money for this, we don't have time, my committee is a big, you know, pain in my rear, then what?
So I think there are a couple of things. First of all, there are free, cheap, affordable, and expensive options in every kind of design, whether it's logo design or website design or creating brochures. We actually have it, and we can put them in the show notes. A really good cost of design guide that walks you through free, cheap, affordable, and expensive options and talks about the benefits and disadvantages of each. So the short answer is, if you have zero budget, you still have some options. For example, ever since CrowdSpring launched in 2008, we have worked with nonprofits in two ways. We started a program we call Give Back in 2008, and we still run it today, where once a month we pick a worthy nonprofit and give them a design project for free. They pay nothing. We work closely with them, and whether it's a logo design or a website design or redesign of their brochures. And we pick among lots of applicants. People can find the link in the show notes, but it's crowdspring.com/give-back. That's a landing page where you can start and apply to that program. So that's one way to do it. The second way, of course, is there are lots of free options for things like logo design. The problem is, and this goes back to really where we started our conversation today, if you don't invest at least a little bit of money in creating a good high quality design, you are putting yourself at a huge disadvantage because people won't immediately connect with your nonprofit in the same way they would as if they saw high quality design. And this is psychological. This isn't connected to your mission. It's not connected to your values. It's not connected to who you are. Is that psychologically, it takes people seconds to form a first impression of a nonprofit's logo or a nonprofit's website. And because of other elements of psychology, so there's something called the anchoring effect, for example, which is when our first intuition causes us to reach a conclusion, we tend to look at other factors just to confirm that our initial conclusion was correct. And how do you translate that to branding? If we see a logo or a nonprofit sign or a website that doesn't look particularly good, the anchoring effect forces us to think about every additional image we see as also having the same problem. So rather than, you know, evaluate the nonprofit for its mission and values and what it's accomplished, we look at the credibility of the nonprofit. So there are free options. It's risky for every kind of organization. There are affordable options. We go through that in the cost design. And it's the reason we launched CrowdSpring. We wanted nonprofits and for-profit businesses to have access to high-quality professional design at 10 times less the cost of what people were charging at the time. And this is why we work with so many nonprofits globally and so many businesses.
Who are your designers? I mean, I've seen some of these other crowdsourcing sites. Where are the designers at?
So we have a community of more than 220,000 designers and namers, because we do business names too. They come from every country in the world.
Yeah.
About half are in the U.S. And the other half is everywhere, from Africa to South America to Canada to Europe. All countries. They are professional designers. They are taxi drivers who are really good designers. Here's the beautiful thing about the business model. As a client, if you're hiring somebody based on their portfolio and resume, and you're not able to see the actual designs, it's really important for you to know who is that designer, what's their experience, what other work have they done. On CrowdSpring, because none of that matters, you're hiring based on the design that you actually like. You see the designs. You don't really care who designed it. And so when we initially sourced our own logo, we picked the one we liked, and the designer turned out to be a janitor. He had just taught himself how to design 6 months before. But the thing is, his design was far better than what professionals were producing. So as a client, it empowers you to pick the best design without regard to who that person is. And it means that a designer could live anywhere, in a small town in North Dakota, in a small town in Africa, in Malaysia, in France, in Canada, or in Silicon Valley. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of these platforms, and we won't promote another platform, but this is essentially how I sourced the design for my first book. When I published my first book, I used one of these platforms that similarly designed my book cover, and I don't even remember where the designer was at in the world, but they designed a remarkably beautiful book cover, and my publisher was quite pleased with it as well. And the book cover has served me really well. So I certainly can appreciate sort of the business model and the concepts sort of behind what it is you all are doing. If somebody is interested in sort of reaching out to you all, getting on your website, I certainly want to put the, you referenced a couple of tools that we can provide our listeners with. How would they sort of gather all this up and perhaps land in the right place?
So we'll add some, we'll ask you to add some to the show notes, but crowdspring.com, CrowdSpring.com is our website. We have a phenomenal blog at crowdspring.com/blog where the nonprofit guide lives. And we have a ton of other guides on branding and marketing and other areas. On Twitter, at Ross Kimbarovsky, RossKimbarovsky, or at CrowdSpring. We're both active there. And otherwise, people can connect with me on LinkedIn. Again, Ross Kimbarovsky on LinkedIn. So we try to share a lot of the learnings because we see, you know, tons of thousands of businesses every year, and we talk to nonprofits and for-profit businesses. And we're a small business ourselves, so we go through the same kind of pain and learn the same kind of lessons. So we try to share these learnings. And fundamentally, the most important learning we try to share is that underinvesting in design is far more expensive midterm to long-term than investing in high-quality, affordable design from the very beginning.
I always like to ask this question, sort of throws people for a loop sometimes, but who's the person you want to hear from? So somebody reaches out to you and you're going to have a very intriguing, exciting, engaging conversation. Who is that person?
I don't know that I have a single person.
Or the profile of that person, you know, certainly.
Yeah. Certainly it's somebody doing something interesting. So there's this concept of mentors, and a lot of people pick a single person to mentor them, particularly, you know, at the higher level, if you're running a nonprofit or if you're running a business, you find a mentor that can help you. And I've never believed in that singular person. I've always believed that I can learn from anybody, people who are my employees, people who run other businesses and you know, secretaries at other businesses. And so it's less about, you know, the kind of person it is. It's more about something unique that person brings to the conversation. So, and that could be about any topic. I have a pretty wide interest. I read a lot on a lot of different topics. And so it could be somebody that knows, you know, quite a lot about cultural relations. It could be somebody that knows quite a lot about time travel. All of those things are important, and it's rarely the person that speaks the loudest on those topics. It's often the person that actually understands those concepts.
Well, Ross, I have really enjoyed this conversation for two reasons, which I said at the beginning. I don't think that we've had a guest in our now nearly 200 episodes where we've talked about branding and sort of crowdsourcing platforms like your own in the same context or even at all. And so I really appreciate you sort of bringing the topic to the show. Ross, you're always welcome to come back. All you got to do is have a big idea or bold opinion about the fundraising profession. Thank you for being our guest.
Thank you, Jason. Happy to be talking to you.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.